You are listening to Punk News Podcast episode 616. John's back from Hollywood, but sadly, we have some RIPs this week. Sadly, Nick Turner of Hawkwind and Inner City Unit and many other bands passed away, and Keith Levine of The Clash and PIL and many other projects passed away. So we're going to kick this track off with a track by Inner City Unit, which is Nick Turner's punk and new wave band. RIP Nick Turner, the space genius. And we'll be right back. This is John, and I'm back from L.A., my L.A. trip, my Hollywood adventure. You know, hooray for Hollywood, a city that's crappiest city in the world, the most rundown city in the world. I drove past the Church of Scientology. Tom Cruise tried to recruit me. I said, you're kind of creepy, and you haven't had a good movie since the 80s. And he said, don't you want to be like me and Kirstie Alley? And I said, definitely not, sadly. Hooray for Hollywood. You can shoot some junk behind the In and Out. Hooray for... All right, so anyways, I'm back from Hollywood. Listen, I had a great time in L.A., and I'm going to talk about my L.A. adventures. But first, and more. What's happening?
It snowed. We got our first snow. Was it yesterday or the day before? Anyway, we have snow on the ground now, so that's... It's one of those things. It's exciting because it's like, yay, snow. But it's also like, snow. So shovels are dusted out. Got the boots back and ready to throw snowballs at everyone.
I'm not ready for that. Because if that's happening to you, then that is coming for me. And I'm not ready for that. It was just like 70 degrees here the other day. I'm not ready for snow. But now it's freezing. It's so, so cold. Like, I can feel that day... is nigh. You like snow. You sound excited about it.
I like snow because it looks nice and it's nice and bright and it's like, it's fun. Winter is one of my favorite seasons because I really like it being cold. But snow, it's a love-hate relationship because it's shoveling and it's driving and snow sucks. And like, you know, there's like downsides to snow. But it means winter is here. So I don't melt. I just freeze, which I can deal with.
I wish I loved the cold. You're saying that, and it's inconceivable to me that someone would be like, I just love that cold. I just love feeling cold.
Well, you can always warm up, but you can't cool down, you know?
Oh God, but yeah, but like, yeah, I would rather just be hot. I would rather just be hot and unable to cool down. I'd be fine with that. How do you like this weather talk, John Gentile?
You know, I like the change of the weathers, although when I live in the Bay Area, I didn't mind that it was 75 degrees all year round, except for like 3 weeks in January. And so I like the seasons. If I have to pick a season, I think summer is my favorite season, just because, you know, it's a little bit more free time. The days are longer. People are just more lighthearted for whatever reason. So I'm voting summer. Hallie Blue, what's your stance? What's your favorite season?
I'm all summer. Although I will say I really used to just think that the seasons could suck it when I lived in the city. But since moving out to the country, I actually do see where, like, at the end of the summer, like, I don't know. I could go on a whole spiel about this, but I'll just say that I appreciate this. I appreciate the seasons more now that I don't live in the city. And I feel like I get to actually experience the seasons and kind of like what they're meant to be more than when I was in the city. And I was just, winter basically just meant I was standing on a freezing cold subway platform. You know, there was like, I wasn't like sledding. You know what I mean? I wasn't like going on like I wasn't like walking out my door and seeing like a winter wonderland, you know? So now I do get, at least I do get, like, I get why seasons are a good thing now. I guess I'll say it. That's it.
Well, there you have it. Hallie Bull is pro seasons. anyways.
Really pro seasons.
I was out in L.A. Until just yesterday. Basically, we had a book signing for Architects of Self-Destruction, Oral History Leftover Crack, as well as Black Daddy's brand new book, Highland Falls. So I flew out to L.A. for that. And I'll be as brief as possible, but I had a lot of fun out in L.A. Again, I was out in Hollywood. And like last time I went to Hollywood, I was surprised at how run down and shitty the whole place was, because I always thought like Hollywood was like glitz and glamour. Like I thought I was going to be running into, you know, like, you know, I don't know, like Taylor Swift and like, you know, Marlon Brando and all those people. But I'm like, it's really just a bunch of rundown, you know, 7-Elevens.
It's 7-11. Pretty trashy. Yeah.
I mean, it really is. So I was expecting that this time. And so I wasn't as disappointed as I was last time. As soon as I landed, I'm driving down the street. My first destination was Amoeba Records. But as I was driving, I saw a shop that said records, records, records. So I almost didn't stop, but I did. And I went on, and the record store was called High Fidelity. And they didn't have a ton of records, but the records they had, like it was all like all golden stuff, man. Prices were extremely reasonable. I think maybe he just had like a really good drop. But I bought a ton of like 80s records there, like The Cure and Joy Division and that kind of stuff, for like $20 a pop. Some cool dollar records, some cool $5 records. So that was a great record shop. Then I went over to Amoeba Records. And last time I was at Amoeba Records, which was, I guess, just after COVID, it was kind of like quiet. I got there on a Friday afternoon. Amoeba Records on a normal Friday is like record store day, any other record store. It was an absolute madhouse. I mean, there was literally hundreds of people in the store, like just climbing over each other, getting records. And it was totally rad to see people that into music. And I realize it's kind of an anomaly because it's Amoeba Records and whatnot. And it's anecdotal evidence, but it was so cool to see people like really into records and CDs or whatever. And Amoeba is the most famous record store in the world because they're the best, man. I will say the prices went up a little bit, but that's because record prices have skyrocketed post-COVID. That being said, I did get some really cool finds. If you're in Amoeba, go to the back of the store where they have more new stuff, and also like on the ground near the records, they have a bunch of new stuff too that they haven't filed yet. That's where I got all my best finds, and it was extremely cool to see my book in Amoeba. I didn't even know it was there. Like, I'm just walking along in the store, and there's my book. I'm like, holy shit, that's rad. I told the lady at the counter, but like, I don't think she understood. Like, she looked at me like I was insane. She's like, what, you bought that book? I'm like, no, I wrote this book. And she's like, what do you mean you wrote that book? I'm like, it's my book. She's like, no, it's on the shelf. I'm like, no. So anyways. But what was interesting is at Amoeba, like, what do you guys, Em and Hallie, what do you guys think, like, the most popular type of record was?
Like, genre?
Genre, sure.
Okay. Taylor Swift.
Yes.
Like pop.
Yes. honestly, like, Taylor Swift still is the queen, man. Like, those records were flying off the shelf. But also, I guess it makes sense. Like hits records were flying. Like, people were, like, I saw lots of people buying Fleetwood Mac's Rumors. I saw lots of people buying, like, Beatles' Abbey Road. I saw lots of people buying, like, Rolling Stones' Sticky Fingers. And I guess that makes sense. Like, doesn't everyone already have those records by now? But I guess the answer is no. You know, Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon, you know, which is cool. I'm glad people are buying those records. It was really cool. I got some really cool records there. Let's see. So I was there for like 5 or 6 hours. It was rad. Then the next day, Blag was doing like a acoustic show at a pizza shop, which was the day before our signing. So I went to Going Underground Records. Okay, a little overpriced, not a whole lot there for me. Then I went down to Radiation Records in Fullerton, which Radiation Records is literally maybe the most famous punk record store in America, or definitely one of the most. It's run by a guy called, Nat Hall, and they got every punk record you want. Do you want Damage with the Anti-Parent sticker? Do you want X's first record, first press? Do you want Dead Kennedys, Plastic Surgery Disaster, UK press? They're all there. So it's a super rad store. The prices are kind of market value. If you really hunt around like I did, you can snipe some deals. But it is cool to see like all these legendary records. You know, do you want Nervous Breakdown first press? There it is on the wall. You got to pay for it, but it's there, you know. So that was really cool. Then I shot over to White Rabbit Records, which is what used to be Burger Records. And if you guys recall, last year I went out to White Rabbit Records. It was super depressing. Like there was like nothing in the store. The guy behind the counter was this weird like guy that was like playing like these weird Monkees interview records for some reason. And it was the air was just stale. I'm like, oh, this is not a good feeling at all. So I went back this year, and actually, like, there was a lot more people there. The cool thing about LA is there are literally like 35 record stores, 40 record stores. There are a million record stores in LA. There was more people there. If you're a hardcore collector, you're probably not going to find a whole lot there. But if you're just kind of starting out your collection, that they got all the hits, so you can go there, and it's a cool little shop. Then I went down to Fingerprints Music, which is in Long Beach, which is where Sublime and Snoop Dogg are from. They had a million CDs, which was kind of cool. Their prices were kind of, I guess, reasonable, but not cheap. They got a lot of records, a lot of CDs. Cool shop. Not my favorite shop there, but a cool shop. Then I shot over to see Blag's acoustic thing at this place called the Four Horsemen Pizza. And it was kind of a rough scene because it was like this place, the Fourth Horseman's Pizza's fourth year anniversary or something. And so a lot of the people were there to see Blag, but a lot of people there were just to drink and eat pizza. So like he's up there playing and people are like just drinking and eating pizza and say, so I saw Cheryl the other day, you know? And it was like I think Blag knew it was going to be a tough scene, but he got up there and he punched through. And I got like those kind of gigs never really are that good because not everyone is there for like the thing. You know, but he did a good job and he punched through. The next day was our signing. I went to a record store. I can't remember what record store I went to before that, but I went back to Amoeba. And then I shot on down to the Last Bookstore in LA, which is totally rad. If you're in LA, you gotta go to the Last Bookstore in LA. It is a massive 3-story bookstore. It's in an old bank. So the vault is open. If you go in the vault, they've got like all these old books and stuff. They got some really rare books too. Like they have Keith Haring's very first zine for sale. They have a bunch of Gary Panter zines for sale, and they just had a bunch of really cool stuff. Before the thing, I emailed our publisher. I was like, "Hey, do you want me to put together some posters so they can put up some posters?" And they're like, "No, we got it taken care of." So of course I get down there, and of course the Last Bookstore happens to be in the same building as my publisher. And I'm walking outside. I get there. I walk around. I don't see a single poster outside. I'm like, well, maybe it's the kind of thing where you can't put posters outside. I go in the store, not a single poster in the store. I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be brutal. You know, like no one even knows about this, you know? And so Blag shows up and Brad shows up The idea was I'm going to introduce Blag, and then I'm going to introduce Brad, and I'm going to talk a little bit about each book, and then I'm going to interview – Blag's going to read a chapter from his book. I'm going to do a short interview with him. Brad's going to do read a chapter from our book. I'm going to do a short interview with him. And then we're going to do like a cross conversation where they're going to talk to each other. I'm going to moderate. And then they're going to play some music. And then we're going to sign books. And so anyway, no one is there. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is going to be brutal. 5 minutes beforehand, there's like two people there. I'm like, oh, my God, this is going to be brutal. So anyways, we like pushed it back like 10 minutes. And I turn around and the place is packed. There was like 150 to 200 people there, which is huge for a book signing. Like a book signing, usually you like to get like 25 people for most books. You know, it was like 200 people there. It was crazy. What was also really cool is Monty Messick of DFL showed up. Jennifer Finch of L7 showed up, which was cool. And so we get up there. I do the intro and I like hype the crowd. Like I do at the punk rock shows, and then Blag read his chapter, which was extremely explicit, and I think too explicit for some people. And then it's Brad's turn, and I'm like, all right, Brad, what chapter are you going to read? And he's like, I'm supposed to read a chapter. I'm like, we went over this like four times, like, you know. So I like forced him to read a chapter, even though he didn't want to. And of course, the crowd loved it. And then we did another chapter, and then they interviewed each other, and it was like totally rad. And then. With punk rock bowling, one of the biggest thrills of my life was like after Leftover Crack played, we literally had like a two and a half hour book signing where Brad and I just signed books for 2.5 hours. And people were like wrapped around the block waiting to sign a book, which was rad. Thankfully, I kind of got to have a smaller version of that again. It's so rad. You work on something so hard and you have to, you know, maneuver around a million potholes and you get it out. And most books, no one gives a shit about at all. You know, like the vast majority of books are failures. I was so happy that kind of one last time for this book. And I'm not trying to make this book my life because I'm trying to work on my new projects now. But maybe like one last time, it was super cool to have people say, oh, the book is rad, or can't wait to read it. It was cool to have Jennifer Finch of L7 say, oh, the book's extremely rad. I'm like, wow, that's Jennifer Finch.
Awesome. Yeah.
You know? And so that was pretty cool. And then afterwards, a bunch of us actually like went out to dinner and kind of had like an impromptu after party, which was, it was like, I made it a point to like the vast majority of writers never get to have that at all, you know? And so I really made a point to drink it in and really enjoy it. The funny part is we wound up at some cafe and I have no idea how we got there. Cause I said to Blag, I'm like, cause there's like three groups of people. There's Blag's group, Monty's group, and Brad's group. And I said, I wound up at this place. I'm like, Blag, was this place your pick? He's like, I have no idea how we got here. I said to Monty, is this place your pick? He's like, I have no idea how we got here. And I said to Brad, is this place your pick? He's like, I have no idea how we got. So we wound up there, but none of the main people like picked it. And so anyways, so the place was kind of lousy. I mean, like it was fine, but it was kind of loud. It was hoity-toity, but crappy at the same time. And so I somehow ended up ordering appetizers for the tables. And of course, the people that were like eating the most and didn't even thank me are like the hangers-on that, like, who is this guy eating all my nachos? You know, but whatever. You know, it's just some guys like eating my nachos, you know, like, but whatever. I mean, I was so happy. I didn't really care, you know. And so it was really cool. I got to talk to Jennifer Finch, who is rad as hell. Like, she is sassy, but in a very lovable way. She's insulting me and stuff. That's hilarious. Kind of like, who's the short comic that always makes fun of people? I mean, he's passed away now. What the hell's his name? He used to hang out with Frank Sinatra.
Mikey has a tattoo of him. Like the insult guy, right?
Don something?
Don Rickles.
Don Rickles. It's like Don, like, she's freaking like hilarious. So like honestly, like it was a dream of a night. It really was. So of course the entire week or half a week, I'm going to all the different taco trucks. I mean, well, across the street from my place was where I say where I was last time, Leo's Tacos. And the cool thing, like, Leo's Tacos is like legit, man. Think about Leo's Tacos is the customers are people from all kinds of people, you know? And so if they think you know Spanish, they'll call out your number in Spanish. But if they think you don't know Spanish, they'll call out your number in English, right? They called I went there like literally like six times over the course of 4 days. And they were like, you know, they'd be like, Cien ochenta sesente. And I'm like, oh, wow, I made the cut. You know what I mean? And so I ran up. I'm like, yo, tango, Cien ochenta sesente. Salsa verde, por favor, y los cebollas. I was honored. So anyway, Leo's time. However, sadly, Crate Man was not there. For an entire year, I was looking forward to Crate Man, and Crate Man was not there, which I'm not surprised because I'm pretty sure I'm the only crepe he sold over the course of a year. But it was good. Also, I'm sure there's a place that I call on the Sunset Strip called I call it Taco Row. I don't know what it's called, but it's literally like 15 different taco vendors just set up at like 6 p.m. till like 3 a.m. And you can like walk through and like order all like a whole bunch of different tacos from different taco sellers. At that place, you kind of do have to speak Spanish because most people don't speak English. And so I got to work out my I'm like, hola, mi amigo, por favor, uno taco, you know. And so like absolutely delicious food. There were some people selling food, like I didn't know what it was, and honestly, like I wasn't at like if I could identify at least the basic what the food was, I didn't order. Like I'm like, I have no idea what that is, you know. And so anyways, Taco Row was delicious. In-N-Out Burger, always fantastic. And let's see, and then the next day I went to Record Safari, awesome record store. Their new bin is absolutely fantastic, great prices, and their wall records are great prices. I finally got a copy of the Germs record for a very reasonable price. I found that their normal bins, rock, pop, hip hop, were actually pretty picked over, which surprised me because the new bins were so good. But that being said, you got to hit up that record store because the new bins are so good. I had lunch with Black Daddy, and we kind of cruised around for a little while because he had some time to kill. We went to a record store called Gimme Records, which was okay. We also went to another record called Cosmic Vinyl Cafe, we went to a place called Six City, which was a barbershop / record store. A little overpriced, I gotta say. I didn't get anything there. We went to a place called Cosmic Vinyl Cafe, and what was funny there is we're going through the records there, and what do they have in the racks? Suburban Nightmare. What to the Dwarves before they were the Dwarves? I've only seen that record once ever in the wild, and what are the chances that Black Daddy and I are at the record store, and there it was, and he bought it, because I don't even think he had, well, actually, I think he had a copy, but he was there with his girlfriend, so I think he bought a copy to show to his girlfriend or something, so he bought it, and he says to the person at the counter, this is my first ever record, and the person's like, that's cool, and like, I could tell they thought that it was the first record he ever bought. And I said to the person, no, he recorded that record. And they're like, oh, he's like an engineer? I'm like, no, that's him. He's the guy, you know? So I like flipped the record over and showed, that's him, you know? And the person's like, oh, wow, that's red. I'm like, all right. So anyways, let's see. And then I went back to Leo's Tacos. And then, I drove past the Church of Scientology. On my last night in LA, I'm at a stoplight. And I see this like thing like going. Oh, I actually got another funny story. So before the signing, the day before the signing, I was at In-N-Out Burger, and I'm walking in, and this guy's like, "Hey man, will you buy me a hamburger?" And usually with I've got a very strict rule. Like if it's an older person, I'll just give them money. If it's someone that I think is strung out, I won't ever give them money because you're not helping an addict out by giving them money. You're not helping them out by not giving them money either because they're going to get drugs either way. But but I was in a good mood. The guy asked me politely. I'm like, yeah, man, I will get you a hamburger. And he goes, really? I'm like, yeah, man, wait here. I'll be back out. So I go into In-N-Out Burger. I get two burgers and a fry and a soda. And I walk back out and the guy's gone. So I'm like, you know, anyways, so listen, I don't know, you know, so anyways, on my last night, I'm driving In-N-Out Burger, and I see, like, this thing going down the sidewalk. I'm like, what the hell is that? And I see it's like a food delivery robot. Have you guys heard about these things?
No.
So, like, it, imagine, like, a cooler with wheels, and it's got, like a flag on it, so you can see what it is. But the funny thing is, like, I don't know why some things are just funny, but it kind of rolls along like it's R2-D2. it's like a little wobbly, and it like moves weird. Like it's like bulky and wobbly, and the way it moves, it gives the appearance that it's kind of dumpy and stupid, even though it's a machine. So I see this thing like bumping down the sidewalk, and they have like a cop directing traffic, and the cop has to hold traffic while it rolls across. And while it's running across the thing, some person comes speeding up the way and smashes the thing, like, spins, like, across the street. And it's like upside down, and the wheels are still spinning. What wheels are left? And I'm like... Bad day for that robot. And then so that was my last night in LA, and so I bought a lot of records. I mean, and more. How many records do you think I bought?
Ooh, I'm going to say 50.
How many do you think I bought? Close without going over.
Yeah, I think less than that. I'm going to say you bought 30 records.
Probably about 100.
What?
But how do you get them home, John?
Great question. So, I wasn't planning on buying that many records, but as soon as I hit High Fidelity, the first record store, which was great, I bought so many records. I'm like, I'm in deep now, man. So I'm like, can I have a box to ship these back in? And he's like, he gave me like this super cool heavy duty box. And then I was going to ship it. Then I'm like, I'll just check it as baggage, you know? Yeah. And so that night I wrapped it all up and like, I packed it super tight and then wrapped it up in duct tape. I'm like, this looks hella sketchy, you know? And so the next morning I go to the airport, I check my bag and she's like, what's in the box? I'm like, records. She's like, what do you mean records? I'm like, vinyl records. She's like, what do you mean vinyl records? I'm like, vinyl record albums. You play them. And she's like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, music. It's music you play. And she's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah. She's like, are you really sure? I'm like, I'm sure. I'll open the box for you. She's like, no, that's okay. And then she checks it, right? And so then I'm in the I'm going through not customs. What do you call it?
That doesn't sound like a professional exchange. Like, to ask all these questions and then just be like, are you sure? And that, like, I don't know, something about that was very, very bizarre. Okay, sorry, go on.
So I'm going through security. I actually had about 10 records in my carry-on suitcase. And so, of course, my luggage gets pulled. And maybe 6 months ago, I was over at my parents' house, and my mom was watching, like, Airport Smugglers or whatever, the show about how they catch smugglers. I'm like, oh, no, I'm going to jail, you know? And they open my luggage, and she pulled out the cocaine swab. And she's swabbing all up and down my records like it would wipe a baby's bottom, you know what I mean? And then I realized, oh, my God, I haven't even looked at any of these records. And a lot of these records from the 70s, and it was definitely a thing in the 70s to do cocaine off a record. I'm like, I'm going to jail. So she swabs them all, like, up and down, and she puts them in the thing, and it goes green. I'm like, whoa, I made it. And then she starts swabbing them again. She puts them in, and it's green a second time. She swabs them a third time. She was
desperate to send you to jail, John Gentile.
She even pulled two records out and, like, swabbed the paper sleeve. Meanwhile, while I'm waiting, there's this guy behind me. He's like, where are you going? I'm like, I'm going to Philadelphia. I'm like, where are you going? And he's like, I'm going to Thailand. I'm like, oh, for work or for vacation? He's like, I'm going to meet my girlfriend. I've been talking to her for 8 years online, and this is the first time we're going to meet in person. I'm like, I hope that goes well.
Oh boy.
Oh no.
You know. And then this guy had like no idea how to get through security. Like, he didn't know you had to take off your shoes and your belt. And like, you know, you have to put your thing in like the little like a rubber box, the thing. Yeah. Like, he didn't know that. Like, he's just putting like his clothes on the conveyor belt. I'm like, this guy has no idea what he's supposed to be doing, you know. So anyway, I made through the checkpoint and got home safe and sound, and I got all my cool records, and that was my LA adventure.
Yeah, very nice. Now, I once saw, okay, so I can't remember who this was, but I had a friend posted something on social where they, I guess, like, it must be some friend of mine that's super, super into beer, or like, you know, like, I don't know, I'm not a beer person, like the like crafted, whatever, I sound like an idiot, like the crafted, independently brewed beer, and they had like a special suitcase with like foam, and then cut out of the, like, you'd open it up, it's all foam, and then cut out of the foam were like little places for like beer cans. It was specifically for like when they were traveling and like bought a bunch of like cool beer and wanted to be able to bring it back. So I feel like you need the equivalent of this for your records. Like, you need like a big suitcase with like a foam big box cut out of it just to store records in. I don't know. I'm just saying, get someone on this. Someone has to have designed this already. I feel like this has to be out there already in the world for you.
I agree. And if you've invented something, email us at podcast@punknews.org and pay us to sponsor your product. Listen, we're going to play a Keith Levine track. Do you guys want to play a Clash Keith Levine track or Public Image Keith Levine track?
Public Image Limited, I would say.
Let's just do Death Disco, one of Keith Levine's most famous tracks by Public Image, and we will be right back. Mm-hmm. And we are back. And sadly, we're going to have to kick off the podcast proper with a bit of sad news. Nick Turner of Hawkwind, Nick Turner of Inner City Unit, Nick Turner of Nick Turner Sphinx has passed away. And I mean, he was 84, I think. So it's not like it was totally unexpected. I had the feeling it had been coming for a while because he used to be on social media all the time. And then about a year and a half ago, he just stopped totally, you know. So, you know, it was kind of sad. I mean, it's sad. But he was a legendary musician and one of those important musicians in rock and roll, and just made some incredible, incredible music. Most people know him for Hawkwind. He's on the first like five or six Hawkwind. He's on the first one. He's on Do Re Mi Fa Sol La Ti. He's on In the Hall of the Mountain Grill. He's in Search of Space. He's on Space Ritual, which is a legendary live album. And he's on Warrior on the Edge of Time, and he's on the one after that. So he's on six studio albums and multiple live albums, including Space Ritual, which is considered Hawkwind's magnum opus. Nick Turner was a far-out, freaky, hippie, kind of weird guy who was an amazing musician. I'm just going to tell two funny, quick Nick Turner stories. I was lucky to see Nick Turner three times. And when I saw him, it was kind of maybe one of the, aside from maybe Inner City Unit, it was kind of like one of the best tours because it was Nick Turner backed by Nicky Garrett of the UK Subs. And I've told the story a bunch of times on the podcast. I'm going to tell it one more time. The backing band was like some dudes, but then also it was two gorgeous women that both played the piano and electric violin and we're into Hawkwind. If you know anything about Hawkwind, if you went to like a Hawkwind show, it's basically like guys that like you know, it's like Comic-Con 1979. You know what I mean? Or like you know, the retro 80s toy convention. It's not the Jersey Shore crowd, you know. So I don't know where Nick Turner found two gorgeous girls that both played electric violin and piano that both liked Hawkwind. I mean, it was
clearly they were fairies. They were actual fairies.
Well,
they were recruited to be in the band.
Dude, like Nick Turner is like you know, he's like a hippie dippy kind of guy. So sometimes he would like kiss them like during the show, and they seem to be into it. And Nick Turner is the man, but he looks, I mean, he's the spaceman, and he looks like he's the spaceman. I mean, he's been through some stuff, man. You know, and so he's
a freaky looking guy.
Yeah. So the first time I saw them is like they're all up on stage and they're waiting for Nick Turner, and then it was at the Boot and Saddle. And in the back, you hear honk, honk, honk. And he just comes marching through the crowd playing his saxophone like it's a trolley or like a bus horn. Like, honk, honk, like, get out of the way. He gets up on stage. They rock the hell out for like an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. And then it's past curfew, so the band stops playing. But Nick Turner keeps playing Tequila, like, on his saxophone. And he won't stop. And eventually, they kind of had to, like, push him off stage because he keeps playing Tequila on his saxophone. The second time I saw him was at Kung Fu Necktie, which was also an awesome time. And so I'm there, and there's this pretty good looking girl, and I'm talking to the girl, and I'm like getting nowhere with this girl. So I just kind of like, you know, just stood there and looked at my phone or whatever. Nick Turner comes up and he talks to her for like a minute or two. She follows him downstairs. She comes where the green room is. She comes back up after like 2 or 3 minutes, and she's like sniffling and like rubbing her nose, you know. And then Nick Turner, and then the band starts playing, and Nick Turner like runs up on stage. He's like 82 at this point, and he goes, "Wahoo!" And they just totally, it was an amazing, amazing, amazing show. And he's playing the flute, and he's playing the saxophone. And like I said before, he's been playing the saxophone for like 50 years, but the saxophone, the key, like not every key configuration is a note. Really, most key configurations on the saxophone are not notes, and he's been playing the saxophone for like 50 years or 60 years, and I can see that he's hitting configurations that aren't notes on the saxophone, and he's still playing it, you know. And so in some ways it's easy to accidentally dismiss Nick Turner as a weird eccentric, which he was a weird eccentric, but also an amazing musician that wrote some amazing tracks. Everyone has got to check out Hawkwind, like any of the first Hawkwind albums. Check out Space Ritual, but also Inner City Unit. Check out the first Inner City Unit album called Pass Out, which is I had been a Hawkwind fan for like 10 or 15 years before I learned of Inner City Unit because it was never that famous. What a thrill that one of your favorite bands, one of your favorite musicians, not only has secret albums you didn't know about, but they're punk albums, and he's not even a punk. And it was like those albums are so incredibly good. I don't want to overtalk them, but they're awesome freaking albums. Next time we do an album battle, I'm probably going to do Inner City Unit. So anyway, R.I.P. Nick Turner, an amazing musician. Sad that he passed away, but at 84, he pretty much lived life to the fullest.
The tequila moment is amazing. And like, but it did make, it made me laugh internally because it reminded me of like my favorite part of his Wikipedia page. Talks about how like he was a member of Hawkwind during their most like commercially successful period and helped write their some of their most popular songs. And then it says, however, complaints about his playing over other members of the band, despite numerous requests to modify his behavior, eventually led to his dismissal in 1976. That made me smile. It gave me such a clear picture of who he was. Do you know what I mean? As a musician.
Yeah, indeed. Sounds person. About right.
Yeah. The Inner City Unit stuff, I don't know. I know people describe it as punk. It's just a little too weird for me. I like couldn't quite get in there. I would actually really enjoy if you would pick that for like an album episode because it would force me to just sit with it a little longer, you know?
Will do. Challenge accepted. and I will be thrilled to introduce more people to the world of Nick Turner. Also, I should also add that what's kind of cool about Nick Turner is also like his very last stuff is also not his very best, but some of it close to his very best stuff. His third to last, well, actually more like his 10th to last album, because he would put out like three albums a year. Like in the past 10 years, he literally put out like three albums a year, but a lot of them are just like studio jam session records. He put out I would say his third to last real album is called Space Gypsy. And it's his first one with Nikki Garrett of UK Subs. Amazing record. If you're a Hawkwind fan, it's exactly what you want. Emmore, I don't know. Are you a Hawkwind fan, or are you a Hawkwind novice, or Nick Turner fan, or novice?
So I do like Hawkwind because I really like Motorhead, and then I was like, oh, Lemmy was in Hawkwind. That's a band. So then I was listening to them. And they're one of the bands that I really like, and then I won't listen to for a while, and then like something will happen and like I'll listen to something again and be like, oh my god, why did I stop listening to this kind of thing. So I really like Hawkwind. I did not know about Inner City Unit, and in the article on Punk News, one of the song or the song by them that's there is Solitary Ashtray, and I thought they were saying Solitary Ostrich, so and I don't know why, it just sounded like it, so I had a very clear picture about, and then halfway through the song, I clued in, and I was like, ah, this changes it
a
little bit.
You were feeling so bad for that ostrich.
I was. It's like, I'll be your friend. But, like, it was like, oh, this fits, like, you know, but... I would be interested in hearing more like by them. So yeah, John, when we do the album battle, I'm looking forward to hearing it. But yeah, it's too bad. Like, it's sad that he's passed, but like, he had a good life. He put a lot of like good stuff into the world. And I really like how it was phrased. He's moved on to the next phase of his cosmic journey. So that's a nice way to put it. That's really nice. And I hope it goes well.
Solitary Ashtray is originally called Solitary Astrid. And basically it's about a German radical woman that tried to kill some people as part of Bader Meinhof. And they had to change the title so they could release the record. So the song is actually Solitary Astrid. That's why Nick Turner's like, Solitary Astrid, don't do it. Don't throw it away. So he's singing about Astrid Paul. But they changed the Astray to get the record out. Cool thing about that single, too, is even today, Nick Turner and Judge Trev, who's the other main guy in the City Unit, they signed a lot of the records like before they were even released. So if you buy one of those singles and it's signed, it probably really is Nick Turner's signature because they signed like 10,000 of them or something.
Wait. Sorry to make you go back. I don't know why I'm stuck on this. Why would you have to change it from Astrid to Ashtray in order to put your record out? Why?
Because at the time, and maybe even now, German censor laws were more strict. And so they were scared that people would think that they were saying her killing people with machine guns was a cool thing to do, even though in the song is actually he's saying don't do it, you see.
Got it. That's so interesting. Wow, good history, John. Damn, dude.
Well, listen, I love Nick Turner and Hawkwind, and R.I.P. Nick. I also am a big fan of Public Image and the sadly departed Keith Levine. I interviewed Keith Levine maybe 6 or 7 years ago. Kind of a weird guy, but a very cool guy. And we talked about the very cool matter of the Public Image album. Was it called Commercial Issue is the album, I think. I can remember. How do you remember the name of the album? Commercial Issue. It's the long lost. So I'll look it up real quick. A Commercial Zone. So basically, the fourth Public Image album is called This Is What You Want, This Is What You Get, and it's got some of Pill's biggest tracks on, including This Is Not a Love Song. Actually, we probably should have played that instead of Death Disco. We'll play that at the end. How about that? And so anyways, however, there's an early version of the album that John Lydon and Keith Levine argued over and ended up in Keith Levine getting fired. That album was released as a bootleg by Keith Levine as Commercial Zone, and you can find those without too much problem. And it's kind of the punkier, harder version of This Is What You Want. And so I interviewed him about that, and he actually did end up releasing it eventually. And one of the cool things about Keith Levine is that he was about maybe 60 at the time. He was saying how his sister was going to come over and help him put the package together. And I thought that was so cool that even at 60, like the fact, like he and his sister got along so well that they were able to like work on art together, which I just thought was a really cool thing. You know, like you hear like 18 and 20 year olds doing that, but at 60, his sister's helping him out, which was cool, you know? So anyways, I mean, Hallie actually might be a bigger fan than I am. So Hallie, I'll let you take the floor.
Wait. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry. Wait, my sound went out for a second. What am I taking the floor on?
Oh, well, I'm basically Keith Levine, extremely important guitarist, extremely important to the concept of post-punk itself. Arguably, PIL might be the first post-punk band, because if you look at the timeline of PIL, it's so much earlier than we think of. Like PIL formed in 77, 78, which is so much.
Mind-blowing. Yeah, no, sorry. It is mind-blowing. Like, you listen to this stuff now, and it sounds so current. It's mind-blowing that this came out in 1978. And, like, I don't think I heard this stuff until the 90s, and it felt so, I don't know, it changed what I wanted music to sound like, right? Because I had like listened to like lots and lots of just like 80s pop growing up, and then I had gotten really into new wave. And actually I got into Pill before I got into Sex Pistols or any punk really. And I feel like Pill was a kind of a critical, like it was kind of a critical transition kind of thing for me, because the guitars are so powerful and like screechy. I don't know. It just was like it had enough of like the new wave thing going on that like I got it. Like my ear could listen to it and get it. But the guitars challenged me totally to change what I wanted out of the music I was listening to. Do you know what I mean? And like it really is crazy that this came out in the late 70s. And you're talking like that first Pill record comes out in 1978. The first Joy Division record comes out in 1979. And I feel like we're still like in terms of like indie rock guitar sounds that are like still driving music today. I feel like we're still pulling from that era of guitars in that genre of music. And I don't know, it's just so cool, especially on that first Pill record. It's like, you've got Theme, which is like a 9 minute long song with like these screechy, screechy guitars. And then you turn around and you have like a song like Public Image, which while it's super aggressive and powerful, the guitar sound is actually really like, it's so catchy and almost pretty. So yeah, sorry, that's probably more than you even wanted me to say, but I think like this guitar work is so, so influential, and it's just crazy to listen to it now and be like, oh, this still feels, I don't know, cutting edge is kind of like a dorky thing to say, but like it still feels very current, and it's not. It's just that everyone that's playing now is trying to sound like this shit, right? You know? That's cool. It's sad when But it's like Em said, it's like what you hope when you die is that you've left some like body of work behind you and this like this trail of influence behind you. So, you know, right on, brother.
You're totally right in that it still sounds it is kind of crazy in that, like, I always beat up on poor Coxbar, and they don't deserve it because Coxbar is kind of cool. But, like, Coxbar put out Shock Troops in 82, right? And you listen to it, and they're like, where are they now? You're like, yeah, punk rock, 82, you know? Meanwhile, like Death Disco came out 5 years before this, and that kind of makes, like, all that, like, Oi and UK stuff and even some American stuff just sound like, so dated. It's like, yeah. It's like they're so far ahead of you, you know? So.
Yeah.
And more, P.I.L., yes. What do you think?
So I really, really liked Sex Pistols. They were like the gateway and all that. They were great. And then I was like, oh, wait, there's another band? Are they going to sound like Sex Pistols? So I listened to, I think the first song I listened to is This Is Not a Love Song. And I was like, what's this? This is different. This is weird. What is it? So, like, I listened to, like, the first part and I was like, no, I'm going back to what I know. And then I revisited it, like, and, yeah, like, they're awesome. They're so good. There's so much going on. Like, there's all these little, like, intricacies with, like, guitars and with all sorts of stuff. And it's wild, like, it's so good. And yeah, exactly, like how it holds up, how it sounds, like fresh still. It doesn't sound like you're just blowing the dust off of something. Like, it's really cool. And yeah, Keith's guitar work was just phenomenal.
Let's play This Is Not a Love Song right now. I can't promise the listeners because I do this in post-mixing. I'm going to try to find the commercial zone version of the song. But if I don't, then we're just going to play the standard version. So this is Pill doing one version of This Is Not a Love Song.
This is not a love song. This is not a love song. This is not a love song. Change.
And we're back. Halle Bullet, 1 to 10, what do you give my John Lydon approximation?
I'd give it like a 7.
I'll take that.
It's not easy to do a John Lydon. He's kind of got his own thing going on, right?
So anyway, speaking of their own thing going on, we debuted the re-release of Nasty Facts. And you say, John, who's Nasty Facts? I've never heard of this band. Because no one's heard of this band, and this is kind of one of the cool, like, dig up from the dirt arc of artifact kind of things. Nasty Facts was a late 70s, early 80s band. They played with Harley Flanagan's The Stimulators, who at the time weren't Harley Flanagan's The Stimulators. They were actually his aunt, Denise Mercedes Stimulators, and the Speedies. And what was really cool about this band is they were on the earliest edge of NYC hardcore, when NYC hardcore actually sounded like DC hardcore. It hadn't developed, you know, the crow. It was Harley Flanagan who developed the chugga chugga chugga, but that hadn't been invented yet at the time. It was, you know, early Beastie Boys, early Bad Brains, and this band called Nasty Facts. They only ever put out one EP and then three tracks. And what was interesting about the three tracks is it almost had kind of like a Buzzcocks pop punk power pop sound. And we got asked to debut this, and usually when people ask me to debut stuff, I'm like, oh, I don't want to do this. I'm like, I'll check this out. And I was like, holy crap, this is great. Nasty Facts, they only ever put out three songs. All three songs are great. Plus, it's unique for the time period. And I just thought this record was absolutely fantastic. I can't remember who said it. Well, like in punk rock, there's all these long lost 7-inches, and you play it and you're like, wow, this is so good. I wonder what the band was like. And it was interesting. I mean, I don't know about this band specifically, but I heard in an interview a little while ago, and some guy from back in the day, he's like, I can't believe people are paying like $600 for a Satan's Rack 7-inch. Like, I was there. That was their only good three songs, you know, and the rest of the songs were bad. And so the cool thing about punk is there's always stuff to discover, and the limitation of the 7-inch might be the very thing that makes a band amazing, whereas if they made an LP, maybe they were crappy, but maybe not. I don't know. I mean, the Stimulators is the best argument against that. The Stimulators ever put out one 7-inch, but there's the after-the-fact live record, and the live record actually is like absolutely fantastic too. So that's not always the case. At any rate, I just thought this was a really cool artifact. I dug this. I thought this was great. And more, what did you think of Nasty Facts and the lead single, Drive My Car?
Oh, it was so good. Yeah, I wasn't sure what to expect. Because it's like, oh, like, you know, like some older punk EPs are, they're either really good or really bad. Like, they're really hit and miss. But this was nuts. Like, it was great. Really, really enjoyed it. And again, it didn't have like that dated feel, like, you know, it's from like the 80s, but it didn't feel like it was that old at the same time. So I really liked it. All three songs are great. It does like make you wonder, like, oh, well, what happened to them, like, after they stopped being a band? Like, what did they do? Would they ever like reunite? Would we even want that? Like, would it be the same? Would it be different? Like, you know, you get all those questions going on. But yeah, it was really, really cool. And finding like the long lost kind of treasures and bringing them to light, I think that's also just amazing, because so much was put out that, again, gets overlooked that is really good, and so much exists now that is not at that level when these bands should be like, hey, check them out. So yeah, John, that's awesome about the premiere. So good. Hallie, what did you think of Nasty Facts?
Yeah, this is like a perfect EP, right? How have I not heard this before? It's so good. John, who's putting this out now?
It is being put out by Left 4 Dead Records, who are also, I'm just going to give it, they actually sent, after we premiered this, they sent me two promo CDs in the mail. I haven't checked it out yet. They're also putting out a CD by a band called The Senders, which I haven't checked out at all yet, but I bet it's going to be great. So they have two things. So Left 4 Dead has released the EP for Nasty Facts and a full discography of The Senders. And I honestly, they're both looking pretty cool, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, that's like just whatever, like round of applause to that label. Cause this is, this was amazing. And there's not much else really that needs to be said about it. Just everyone should listen to this. What an absolute like lost little gem. It's like a perfect little EP.
There you have it. And more is the hoity-toity video, a perfect little video. It tells about hoity-toity.
Oh, it is. It is. It is a perfect video and so much more. So hoity-toity are a really cool band. They're from California. They're like alt rock, like kind of out like pop rock, indie sort of. Like they have a punk vibe overall. And they've just released a video for their new song, Playing the Game. So the song is going to be off their like upcoming EP. It doesn't have a name or a release date yet, but it will exist at some point, which I'm really excited for. So the video is really fun. It shows like the band, they're getting ready to play, and the lead singer grabs a water bottle out of the fridge, and it has a Mario mushroom on it. And they get ready, and everyone set up, and like takes a sip of the drink, and then everyone like turns into video game characters. So like there's Princess Peach and Luigi and like all sorts of different video game characters like in the pit. And on stage, the guitar and bass have been replaced by Guitar Hero guitars and stuff. And everyone's just like having a good time and playing like Dance Dance Revolution. And it's really, really fun. The video is really fun and you'll get a kick out of it. Like it's just great. And the song is also really good. It's very catchy. It has some like really cool riffs. Their guitarist, Aria, is super talented. The lead singer Shelby, like her voice is absolutely just nuts. Like it's really cool. There's like, you know, when you listen to something and you're just like, yep, there's like a power to this. Like there's some sort of like energy exchange kind of happening. That's what like the majority of hoity-toity songs have, and this one definitely does. So that's really, really cool. And another kind of cool thing about the song was mixed by Reed Wolcott of We Are the Union, so that was just really cool. But yeah, they have one EP out now called Not Your Kind, and it is very good, so check that out if you haven't checked it out already. But yeah, hoity-toity are great. I'm really looking forward to more from them. And what did you guys think of the Playing the Game song and video?
It was so interesting. I felt like it's really genre bending, which I appreciate, right? There's just a lot of the song kind of kept me guessing because there were so many different interesting like influences that they were sort of like mushing all together. It just didn't all like quite, it didn't congeal for me. Do you know what I mean? It was like, I think that's just because some of their influences, you know, she does sing really, really well. Holy shit, what a voice. But it's just like, it's not totally, I don't know. It's not like totally the kind of voice that I want to hear in rock, like in pop maybe, but like, it just was a little too like, I don't know. What was that band that like Fergie sang in? What's that
Black
band?
Eyed Peas?
Black Eyed Peas. Like she sang a little like Fergie to me or something. And like, not all of the, yeah, you know, it's like, it's one of those things where like, I admire what they did. I'm watching it. I'm like, I see that they're talented. I like what they're doing. I just like, it's not for me. And I probably wouldn't listen to it again. Do you know what I mean? But, John, I'm so curious to hear what you thought of this.
Well, I love a video with a party. I don't know why. If it has a party in it, I love it. Especially the people who dress up in like wacky outfits and stuff. Anything from Fight for Your Right to Party to hoity-toity doing Playing the Game. I love party videos. One of the things I like about M-More bands is that they're, I mean, one thing that annoys me about kind of some modern punk rock, and I mean this, modern punk rock, a lot of it falls into maximum rock and roll, where it's a band playing hardcore with a tinge of metal, and it's scary and it's spooky, and the guy's like, you know, the violence of life is crushing me. It's like, that's cool, but it's been done before, you know. And then a lot of bands is like, you know, the drinking friends, you know, like You're like, we're going to get through the night together if we just hold on. You know, it's like, oh, my God. You know, and then there's like the retro band, like, you know, we're going to fight society. We're going, you know, you can't tell us what to do. So what are you doing to fight society? And the answer is drinking and writing songs about fighting society. And so, like, so many – and also there's like the wimpy, like band that is just so meek and mild. I'm like, oh, like the car seat headrest, basically. So anyway.
Oh my God, that band is so good. Don't talk smack about car seat headrest.
I hate their name so much.
What a good band though.
So anyways, the point being is I hate all music. And what I like about M Moore bands. What I like about M Moore bands is there really are no more rules. Like this is kind of very poppy, but it's definitely kind of a punk, like. A lot of the elements here, like, they're all dressed up. You know, she's singing kind of like a soul or a pop singer. Even some of the music is poppy, but somehow it doesn't feel pop. It sounds very punk or counterculture, you know. So what I like about a lot of the M Moore bands is that they just take pieces from wherever, and there aren't any rules again. Kind of like the era of Pill, when Pill saw that the rules were punk were being erected around them, they just completely smashed through them. Same with the Slits. That's why I like M Moore bands. And honestly, I didn't love this, but I like that we're going in an interesting direction and just building something new from maybe previously established parts, which is basically how all music gets built anyways. So
yeah.
So yes, while I was not a huge fan myself, I would support this band. I would even go see them live because this is where the new energy is at and the interesting things are going. I don't need to hear some guy dressed in all black pretending that he's, you know, some monster with chains and knives, like, we're going to kill it in the night. It's like, dude, you drive a Honda. You work at a print shop, you know, or, you know, let's drink, my friends, and celebrate mediocrity because I never tried anything in my life because it's safe to never try. That way I'll never really fail, you know.
Who are these hypothetical bands? This is so weirdly specific, what you're calling. Oh wait, so what was the what was this last genre meant to be that we're gonna, what was that?
You mean we're gonna drink and be friends and never anything?
No. Okay, all right, yes, I know, yes, I know what genre you're talking about now. Okay.
And so while we could try and do something, we're gonna band together and ridicule anybody that tries to do something daring because they're out there in the danger zone and we're here where it's safe. And we know we'll never really succeed, but we'll never really fail because we never really tried. And we're going to drink and be sworn to corporate identities, even though we pretend to be independent. That's why we drink Pabst Blue Ribbon, a giant company owned by Germans and Chinese companies. But we're independent. You know, how dare you go see a major label band? Meanwhile, I'm wearing Skechers. Anyways.
Wow.
Hallie Bullock, let's talk about a band that fits in none of those categories, Gladdy. Tell us about Gladdy.
Yeah, Gladdy's got a new record out. I love this band. I just think this band is so, like, quality. I know this is a weird word for a band, but, like, I think everything that Augusta Koch and company put out is just really, really top-notch songwriting and musicianship and lyrics, and I love her voice. I've loved her voice since she was in Cayetana, and this new album is called Don't Know What You're In Until You're Out. It's a really great album. Looks like 11 fantastic new Gladdy tracks, and Augusta sort of released a little statement about it when it came out. She said, it is the absolute coolest thing in the world to see people listening to our music. Putting this out ourselves and saving the money for the vinyl pressing was a bit scary to say the least, but I'm so glad we took the leap and we have you all to thank for making this work. So yeah, so this is out on Plum Records, which is their label. And I don't know, it's just it's a really gorgeous record about personal growth. She says in this statement that she, you know, when she was writing the record, she reevaluated my relationship with music, alcohol, got engaged, started adjusting to life with chronic health issues, switched jobs a few times. And so it's just like, it's a deeply personal album without being, There's just her, there's nothing in her writing that ever feels self-indulgent. It feels like she is just like, she's a lovely person and she's letting you in on the stuff that she's thinking and feeling. And it's all just set to like completely catchy, wonderful music. And I can't rave about it enough. John, I know you're a Gladdy fan.
I am a Gladdy fan. I saw the first time I saw Gladdy was opening for, what was the Jeff Rosenstock, Chris Farren band called? Anarcho-Vespucci. Yeah. I saw them opening for them, and I thought they were real cool. I wasn't a huge Cayetana fan. I was fine on them, but I actually think Gladdy is kind of more interesting. And I usually don't like that kind of indie rockish kind of music, but I think there's such good songwriters, and she's a great singer, and he's a great guitar player. I think it's real cool. I do feel bad about Gladdy because Cayetana historically does not like punk news, and it's kind of our fault in that some, not even one of the staff reviewers, just some reviewer reviewed like one of their last 7 inches and gave it a bad review, and it wasn't even a terror. It was a 6 out of 10, and it was basically like, I don't really care for this, and I think they kind of took that to heart, and it's my understanding that they haven't liked punk news ever since, which I understand. I mean, I'm like, if I was in their shoes, I'd be like, screw that, because they gave us a bad review, so F them, you know what I mean? But I always felt bad about that, and I know we reached out to them a couple of times, and they just weren't interested, which is unfortunate, but I mean, I understand their position, and I feel bad about that, but that's the cost of running a website when you say, do people do good or bad, I guess, while standing, while watching people, just like I was talking about how making fun of bands that never try, a website that reviews people in bands, while not actually making music, you know. So anyways, so I think Gladdy's real cool, and I think this is one of the neatest things they've ever done so far. Also, there's a zine that comes with it too if you buy the zine. So
what just happened?
I'm getting choked up over Gladdy. I'm so emotional.
I ruined your mm-hmm. flow. Sorry, John.
That was all I had to say.
You were okay. It sounded like you'd gotten stabbed in the throat. Like in the horror movie when someone gets like stabbed in the throat and then like they're like gloop gloop. I wanted to make sure you were okay.
What's actually going on? It's Gladys. Okay, Donna's still mad. And they got a knife to my throat. And they're like, you better say good things about us or we'll really get revenge. Shh.
Oh, my God. Gladys put a hit out on you. They're really missing you, man. They're really mad about it.
The reason, if some asshole is mad at punk news, I don't care because they're an asshole. But it seemed like she's a really nice person, and the guy, I know the guy's a nice guy because he didn't know who I was, but I was talking to him once. And he seemed like a chill guy, so I feel bad because I think they're nice people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And more. What do you think of Gladdy?
Yeah, I really like Cayetana. They were great. Big fan. And then when like Gladdy stuff started coming out, it was really good. I haven't checked out the full album yet. I'm really looking forward to listening to it. I think I'm gonna listen to it tomorrow. But I really liked Nothing, the first single from it. It was great. So I'm really looking forward to checking this out. I think Glad you're great.
Well, I agree. So let's just run through a couple of quickies and we'll wrap this on up. Here's one quickie. The Damned, of course, this month did the reunion shows. I believe there was 4 or 5 of them, whereas the original Damned, Captain Sensible, Rat Scabies, Dave Anian, and Brian James. And actually, if you looked at the set list online was actually pretty cool. They did all the first album, about half of the second album, and then some real surprises. What they did for each of the gigs is they recorded them and have released them through Live Here Now, which is a really cool service where basically they record the live show and you can buy the live show that you were at. What's sad to me is that this has been around now about 10 or 15 years, Live Here Now, and it never really caught on, and it's such a cool thing. I mean, in like 2005, 2008, there were some shows where you could go to, and then at the end of the night, you could buy the show that you were just at on CD there, which was like so cool. But for some reason, it never caught on. I'm actually surprised the Damned did this because it seems like this service is fading out, but I'm super glad they did it. I remember about 5 or 6 years ago, the old Live Here Now was going out of business, and they had all the Bauhaus albums, live albums, down to $8 each, and all the Hall & Oates live albums down to like $3 each. So I bought like 10 Bauhaus live albums from like the 2010 tour or whatever, and like 4 Hall & Oates CDs for like $3 each. And it's just so cool to have these live documents. I wish more bands would do this. And kind of like, who cares if it's not the greatest performance? Like, it's still kind of a cool thing. I guess that it's bands just can't make money doing it. I guess the demand just isn't there. I love the concept of live here now, and I'm super glad the Damned recorded these reunion shows. I actually ordered all five of them because shipping to USA, if you buy one or all five, the price to USA is only like twice as much. So you might as well get them all in the USA. England, it might be different because due to shipping. At any rate, Hallie Bullitt, do you think this is cool? And why do you think Live Here Now or the whole buy the live show thing never really took off, even though I think it's such a cool thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel, you know what? Like the Unlovables, we did a set at Maxwell's that someone recorded and then put out. And I'm like wondering if it was this same, I'm wondering if it was Live Here Now. I'm like not remembering who did that, but I think it's really cool. I mean, I don't know. This is a shot in the dark. I'm going to guess YouTube, right? Is it just that people can just like look up live shit on YouTube and they don't, but I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. It is pretty cool, you know, because there is something about going to see a band live. And sometimes, you know, there are certain bands that like, as much as I listen to them driving or in my bedroom or, you know, however many memories I have connected to listening to their music, there's like the live show is like the most like definitive memory that I have of that band. So it is cool to be able to just like have a copy of that exact show. I don't know why that wouldn't catch on. But as for whether I think this is cool, I think it's very cool. And I also, as a sidebar, someone in the comments linked to this documentary about the Damned's like New Rose 7-inch. Did you guys see that?
I did not.
I wasn't able to watch it, but like I kept it open in my browser. I'm like definitely going to watch it. And actually I thought it's kind of cool, John, because you were just sort of talking about the magic of the 7-inch, you know, as like a form of music. And so, yeah, from the first like 30 seconds that I was able to watch of this doc, that again, like someone linked to it in the comments on this story, it seemed like it was going to like be discussing the importance of that 7-inch in music history and like also placing it in context of the punk music scene of that time. And it seemed like it was going to be cool. So I'm going to check it out. Em, what are your thoughts about the Damned and these live recordings?
I like the Damned. The Damned are great. The reunion shows seemed really cool. I did YouTube the Damned live reunion tour because that's the only way to get it. Like, I didn't know about the Live Here Now thing. That's a really cool idea, and I would definitely like be on board for that because that's really like awesome. Like, you know, you want to remember the show that you were at and to have it in crisp detail, like super cool. But yeah, I saw a video of them on their final show doing New Rose, and it was phenomenal. They were so good. They had so much energy. Like, everyone's like, it was great. Like, I'm excited for the live recordings because you know, new Damned's always great, and I mean like old Damned is always great, so live Damned is great.
Along those lines, as I picked up at Amoeba Records used for $17, the Damned just released the Night of a Thousand Vampires CD/DVD/Blu-ray set. It's awesome. Check it out. Two last quick stories. Madness are releasing a new album. It's their first album in a couple of years. The rumor that Madness is playing Punk Rock Bowling, I think they were supposed to a few years ago. I don't have any inside info, but we'll see. I'd love to see Madness live. I never have. I'd be super psyched to see them. I was excited that a new Madness album is coming out, but then I realized like Madness is awesome, but like after like their first like two albums, it's like kind of like not. It's like just kind of weird 80s music aside from like our house. It's like the first two albums are like just bulletproof ska and some deviation. And not that I'm a ska maniac, but I love those first two like Madness albums. And they just kind of go into like 80s pop or even like adult contemporary sometimes. And I'm like, do I even care if Madness is putting out a new album? Hallie Bullitt, I love the Madness, but do you care that Madness is putting out a new album? Or is it like, just play the first two albums?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have high hopes. I mean, how amazing would it be if they came out and just like knocked it out of the ballpark? Like, it'd be so good. But I'm with you. I would still see Madness live. I still think that would be great. I just, it seems like the kind, you know, I don't know. I went to see like the specials at South By, whatever that was, like not super long ago. And it was still like an amazing live show. It just seems like the kind of genre that like you can still pull off like into your, you know, into your middle age and senior years. So I think it could be cool to see Matt. I don't know. So many bands that I used to love that I never got to see live. And then I always have the dilemma of like, do I go now? Right. And then what if they're not good? And then that's the image that's in my brain. Or do I just fucking go because I'll regret never having seen them?
Well, I would say go, because the first time I went to see Nick Turner, I thought it was going to be terrible. I went to literally just see Nick Turner, like literally see him, right. You know,
and then I'm like,
it's going to suck, but at least I'll have seen Nick Turner. And then he just comes through the audience, blasting his saxophone, and gets up, kisses two hot chicks, and just rocks for 95 minutes. You know what I mean? So, I would argue,
so fun.
I would argue the reason that ska allows you to age gracefully is the suit. I'm being serious. Like, yeah. You look cool when you're young in the suit. You look cool when you're old in the suit. I think that's why. Hallie Blair, and then we'll go over to M. Madness better than the specials, or specials better than Madness? I'll say Madness better than the specials. And I like the specials.
I'm just such a huge specials fan. That it just has to do with like when they. Yeah, I'm gonna go specials.
And more, break the tie.
I'm going specials because I know more songs by them.
And more, do you care that Madness is putting out a new album? And would you like to go see them live?
I think it's cool. I like when bands still have a passion for what they're doing and want to keep putting stuff out and trying different things. Like, I think that's really cool. I don't know a lot of Madness songs. I think I might only know like two. But I would go see them live because, like, why not? Like, they're there, they're performing. Like, it'd be really cool. And some of the best shows are when you don't know a whole lot of the songs.
Last thing, see the bands while you can. UK subs are announcing their final full UK tour. What that really means is they're not going to do, you know, 3-month dates anymore. They might do like a week here or 2 weeks there. And how can you blame them? Charlie Harper is literally like 76 or 78, like literally. He's 78. So anyways, like, you know, Nick Turner, RIP, we're sad to see him go. Charlie Harper's still here. Go see Charlie Harper and tell him that you think Charlie Harper's cool, because I've seen UK subs once and they were cool as hell and great. And everyone says Charlie Harper's a rad dude. So UK subs are on their final big tour. Hopefully they'll come back to America at least one or two more times. And I think everybody should, if you're in Europe, I think you should go see Charlie Harper and more UK subs. Thumbs up. What if M's like, I hate Charlie Harper. He's 78. Tell him to hang it up. No, and more. What's your stance on Charlie Harper and UK subs?
I really like the UK subs. I think Charlie Harper's really, like, he seems really cool. I've never seen them live. I'd love to see them live, but he seems really cool. One of the first songs I learned on bass was Warhead. So it's just like, it'd be so cool to see them live. But again, I don't know if they're like gonna come to North America or what's going on with that. But yeah, like, if you can see them while they're before they scale her back a bit, like, you gotta go see them for me. Tell me how it is. Get me a live here now of them.
John, how do you think this band is now? How do you think UK subs are now?
I'm predicting 20? Yes. I'm yeah. Predicting yes. I saw him 10 years ago, the kid. I mean, he was already 68 10 years ago, and they were kicking ass, you know, so.
Yeah, I would love to see UK subs. I went through a big UK subs fan, but phase, but I didn't see them live, and I would really love to.
Are you extremely pleased that UK subs did indeed make it all the way A through Z? They have an album for A, B, C, D, and E, all the way. They have one album for each of those. As opposed to poor Sue Grafton, who got to Y is for Yesterday and then died.
I don't know, but not a, I don't know. I'm feeling so bad for Sue. I'm wanting to somehow put a positive spin on this. By not ever completing it, is it like she just goes on and on? Like, she just never quit? No, it's better to finish what you start, man. Right? Always.
cool thing about UK Steps is not only did they make it to Z, they did two cover albums after that, which I think is the perfect way to cap it off. You know what I mean? Like, so anyways, go see Charlie Harper live. So anyways, let's play a song. What do you guys want to play? Should we play Hoity Toity? Should we play Gladdy? We can do one of each. You guys want to do one of each?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, play Gladdy. So, I mean, it's the single that was out for a while, but it's so good, and I don't think we ever played it. So why don't we play Nothing?
So we're going to play Nothing by Gladdy. We're going to play Hoity Toity Playing the Game, and we're going to play some UK subs just to cap it off. Maybe New York State Police, or maybe Lady Barrister. I don't know. One of the cool UK subs tracks. Anyways, you can reach the podcast at punknews.org, and we will see you next week.